This is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on community and independent radio stations nationwide. The prevailing ethos in mainstream United States for centuries has been an unrealistic ideal of rugged individualism. But crises like the COVID-19 pandemic lay bare the notion that we can get by without relying on one another. In a new op-ed for Yes Magazine, Farah Tanis writes, quote, "American individualism has not worked for BIPOC individuals and communities who have historically leaned on each other for support and survival." She makes the case that, quote, "Black land collectives, whether through deeded lands or land trusts, are a remedy for the collective grief from which Black people have struggled to recover." I'm so pleased to welcome to the program Farah Tanis, Executive Director and Co-Founder of Black Women's Blueprint, Inc. She's an internationally acclaimed grassroots activist and advocate for Black women and girls, and has over 20 years of experience in community leadership, fundraising, human rights initiatives, movement building, organizational development, public speaking, and strategic mobilization. Her op-ed at Yes Magazine is entitled "Decolonizing Black Women's Health Through Land Reparations." And for full disclosure, I was her editor on this piece. I'm so excited, Farah, to bring you on the show.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for having me, Sonali. It's wonderful to be here.
So first, let's talk about the story that you opened this op-ed with, a very personal story of you, your mother. Tell me about your mother, her connection to land that she once had and that she lost.
Absolutely. My mother, as a Black woman, was a survivor of many things, a survivor of various forms of atrocities. And as we know, this is the story and this is a narrative of many, many Black women in the United States and many women, Black women globally, right? We are sitting at the intersection of various identities, of various experiences. Our material conditions are impacted by that. And that was the case for my mother, right? Who was a Black woman, who was an immigrant woman, who immigrated to the United States and really came into a culture where she found herself very much alone, very much having to depend on herself in order to achieve any aspect of economic security, right? Although she was a married woman, as you know, in cases of domestic violence, she was also a domestic violence survivor. She found herself very much isolated. And as we know, with domestic violence, financial abuse, domestic abuse, sexual abuse, these are all traumatic events in the lives of domestic violence survivors. And so getting free from any survivors includes economic freedom. It includes building and scaffolding strategies for independence. And such a strategy for my mother was being able to purchase a piece of land in Florida. And so after having purchased this piece of land in Florida, her plan, that was part of her escape plan. And so the story I tell in the article of my mother confronting my father after she discovered he had sold her land, and this is in the 80s, by some means he had figured out how to sell her land, thereby trapping her in a situation where she felt hopeless. She felt lost. She felt, again, pulled in to a dynamic of dependence in an abusive relationship. She was already suffering from depression. She was already suffering from anxiety and the sense of hopelessness. Right? She was struggling economically. And so even being able to buy this piece of land through traditional practices of collectivity, like the susu, which is an African system where we collectively collect, we pool our funds together, and we are able to purchase land, homes, cars, different things that we need in order to live day to day and improve our material conditions. She was able to purchase this land. And after finding out that my father had sold this land, confronting him, she was beaten savagely yet again by my father. Me and my siblings were in the other room, could hear it. So that added to the despair, and my mother lost all hope to live. That had already been at issue, right? The sense of just the hopelessness. And so this was sort of like the climax of it all for her. And she attempted to take her own life. In the process of attempting to take her own life, moved way past ideation. The plan was there. She decided, I am going to reach out for help. By some miracle, she decided she was going to reach out for help. She dialed zero for the operator. She dialed zero again. Every time an operator picked up, and she couldn't sense that that operator was someone who she felt, perhaps through the way they spoke, through the cadence in their language, in their speech pattern, she kept dialing zero until a Black woman picked up, and she was clear and she knew that it was a Black woman. This Black woman picked up and engaged my mother in a way that gave her the hope that she needed, that reminded her of the sense of connection that Black people, that Black women have built with each other. And this Black woman across the phone was able to touch my mother in that way and to give her the sense of hope that she needs and to tell her, your children will fulfill your dream. And so I sit here proudly saying this, that your children will fulfill your dream of land stewardship. Your children will fulfill your dream of financial independence and of healing. And so it's an incredible story that my mother reached out and there was a Black woman, a stranger, and yet that mutuality, that sense of mutual aid, all of that came to play in the dynamic between the two of them, was recreated. And that helped my mother pretty much to set aside her plans to kill herself and to commit suicide and to want to live, because she gets to live and she got to live and see this day where I, along with several other Black women like herself who are survivors, and I, along with Indigenous women who are not just survivors of physical and sexual violence, but of course we're survivors of generational trauma, of white supremacist violence, and now we are stewarding land. And so I am my mother's dream. We are our mother's dream and dreams, and definitely we are the dreams of our ancestors, Sonali.
So you write that she was really hoping to bequeath this land to her children, which is such an important part of the story, because we see generational wealth being passed down, between privileged white generations, one generation to the next, and that being a way in which wealth gets hoarded. And when you have Black communities of color being unable to even own land, and let alone pass it down to their children, that income inequality, the wealth inequality remains. And so let's talk about the idea that you explore in your op-ed and that you work on with Black Women's Blueprint, how land, not just individual ownership of land, but collective stewardship of land, can be a really healing kind of thing for Black women in particular, a way to heal and to move on.
Absolutely. So when you think about land and the history of land in the United States in particular, right, and the history of land for Black people in the United States, Black children, right, we know the statistics show us, according to the census, Black children are twice as likely to live in poverty, right, than white children. And underlying this poverty, this racialized poverty, right, is racism. Underlying this economic problem is racism. It's this fundamental inequality in wealth, in land, in power, right? And that impacts our very lives. It impacts our very health. And to do it alone, it is very rare for an individual who doesn't come from wealth, a Black individual who doesn't come from wealth, to be able to acquire land on their own. And so the way that we are doing that and is through collectivity. At Black Women's Blueprint, we're doing that through collectivity. during the crisis of 2020, right, during the pandemic, we were able to acquire 300 acres, almost 300 acres of land in central New York. And so through the acquisition of that land, what it does is it gives us a sense of, a lot of people are not very, very comfortable, including myself, with the word ownership, mm-hmm. right? Because it's framed within a paradigm that sort of speaks and rests on capitalism. So the idea of collectivity and collective stewardship is one that is incredibly important for us. Purchasing the land was a collective effort. It depended on several of us to come together. It depended on individual donors to come together during the crisis to be able to purchase this land. We're calling this land, which is a reconciliation center, it is a farm, it is a place to co-steward and live and build our dreams. We're calling this land a place for all people to come and recover, for all people to come and recover from states of grief, to restore their health, to restore relationships critical to their lives and their well-being and the well-being of their children. So our mission is really to steward various journeys for folks, because it is a journey. It's a journey to collectivity. It's a journey back from individualistic thinking, the individualistic thinking that we've been steeped in. It's a journey out of that into the mutual aid, the cultures of mutual aid, the cultures of solidarity economy, the cultures and practices of mutuality and collective survival that many BIPOC cultures and BIPOC ancestries, BIPOC nations that we have been steeped in. This is what we know. And so we're stewarding those journeys for ourselves and others to get back to land and get back to collectivity.
Can this be viewed through the lens of reparation?
Absolutely. Oh my goodness. I think that when we think of reparations, there is a tendency to think that the only way to get repair is to ask of it from the policymakers and from the state itself. We have been asking for reparations from policymakers, from the state, from our government for quite some time, right? We can, my gosh, talk about Cali House, right? 70 years before the civil rights movement called for reparations. She was the leader of the National Ex-Slave Mutual Relief, Bounty and Pension Association, founded in 1897. Then we have Audre Moore, who moved forward to do this in the 1960s. More recently, Ta-Nehisi Coates, right? The case for reparations in 2014. So, there is a need to demand of our government reparations. But I think that we ourselves too, through our privilege, through the access, through our work, we can begin to repair each other's wounds. We can begin to repair and heal each other's past, present, and future. We can begin to future-proof the lives of our children. That too is reparations. So transferring 100 acres of land to Black farmers for Black Women's Blueprint is making reparations. It is, because we have been able to access this land, it is now our duty to lift as we climb. It is our duty to engage in a process of repair, so that reparations is not just about the 20 acres and a mule. It's also, how do we begin to engage our communities and families into a culture of repair, of repairing the harms that they have suffered? And so transferring 100 acres also to Indigenous women who were the original stewards of the land is also a way of engaging in repair. And so, yes, this is an act of reparations. It is not just the reparations in terms of just providing acres of land to individuals, but it's what that those acres being having access to land, having access to open, green, blue space means to repair the harms that have been caused over centuries.
So tell me about your organization and the initiative Black Women's Blueprint and what you hope will happen over the next few years, and speak to those who might have, a way to potentially support your work. And is it just is it geographically specific or is it national?
The organization is a national organization. Black Women's Blueprint is a Brooklyn-based nonprofit organization. It works nationally with women and girls to help Black women and girls in particular to thrive after trauma. We offer counseling. We offer various traditional and non-traditional forms of therapy and education, healthcare access, including reproductive healthcare access. We are focused on right now, this land-based work that we're doing to repair harm, to reconnect ourselves to each other and to our own bodies. It, again, when I say it's a reconciliation center that we are spearheading, which is our flagship, we are inviting individuals from all walks of life across identities, right? Across identities, but specifically within Black and Indigenous communities to recover from all states of grief, to restore health and restore relationships critical to their lives and their well-being. So the initiative weaves ancestral as well as traditional methods of healing, and we aim to radicalize our sense of healing, not just as individuals, but as a collective process. And so our land back work is about that, decolonizing health by increasing land and farm accessibility for Black and Indigenous women is also about that. And so we're incredibly just excited to be really at the sort of the cusp of a wonderful moment where we get to develop a new social contract, where we get to focus and foreground mutuality and reciprocity, you know, as the new social contract and the new way to relate to each other.
About a website, Farah, for where people can find out about the work you do?
Yes. RestoreNY.org is our website. You can find out about the work we do at Black Women's Blueprint. You can find out about the work we do as a reconciliation center, as an organization led by and for Black women.
And we'll post a link to that from our website. Farah, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. This has been incredible. Thank you for the opportunity, Sonali.
My pleasure. My guest has been Farah Tanis, Executive Director and co-founder of Black Women's Blueprint, Inc. We've been discussing her new op-ed at ES Magazine entitled Decolonizing Black Women's Health Through Land Reparations, which you can read online at esmagazine.org. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. Our website is risingupwithsonali.com, where you can become a subscriber, find our audio podcast on iTunes and Spotify, and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.